Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Text 34. Dahyamanasya dehasya Dumascha guru surabhi surabaha
Dumascha guru surabaha
Uttita Krishna nirbhukta
Uttita Krishna nirbhukta
Sapadyata papmanaha
Sapadyata papmanaha
Dahyamanasya dehasya
Dahyamanasya dehasya
Dumascha guru saurabha
Dumascha guru saurabha
Uttita Krishna nirbhukta Sapadyahata papmanaha
Sapadyahata papmanaha
Dayamanasya dehasya Dumascha guru saurabha Uttita Krishna nirbhukta
Sapadyahata papmanaha
Sapadyahata papmanaha
Do they, your book say near Mukta?
Yeah, Mukta.
Okay. Mukta. Mukta, okay. Okay, okay. Dahyamanasya. While being burnt to ashes.
While being burnt to ashes.
Dehasya.
Dehasya.
Of the body of Putana.
Of the body of Putana.
Dumaha.
Dumaha.
The smoke.
Cha
and Aguru Saurabha turned into saintly scented smoke of the Aguru herb. Turned into saintly scented? Maybe that's faintly scented. I don't know. Maybe a mistake in the editing. Uttitaha,
emanating from her body.
This is not a hard one. I see, we're using it as a snappy.
Krishna
nirbhukta,
because of Krishna's having sucked her breast.
Sapadi,
immediately.
Ahata papmanaha.
Her material body became spiritualized.
Or relieved of all material conditions.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada.
Because of Krishna's having sucked the breast of the Rakshasi Putana. When Krishna killed her, she was immediately freed of all material contamination. Her sinful reactions automatically vanished. And therefore, when her gigantic body was being burned, the smoke emanating from her body was fragrant like aguru incense. Purport. Such are the effects of Krishna consciousness. If one somehow or other becomes Krishna conscious by applying his senses in the service of the Lord, one is immediately freed from material contamination. Shrinvatam Sokata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtanoha. Hearing about the activities of Krishna is the beginning of purified life. Punya Shravana Kirtanaha. Simply by hearing and chanting, one becomes purified. Therefore, in discharging devotional service, Shravana Kirtana, hearing and chanting, is most important. Then, with purified senses, one begins to render service to the Lord. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam. Bhakti Ruchyate. This is called bhakti. When Putana was somehow or other, directly or indirectly, induced to render some service to the Lord by feeding him with her breast, she was immediately purified, so much so, that when her nasty material body was burnt to ashes, it gave off the fragrance of agurva, the most agreeably scented herb. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam. Krishna is the master of all senses. We have bodies. These bodies are made of various tissues, various organic substances. We read descriptions of them in the Vedic literature, or we can go to medical school and study anatomy and physiology and learn from a different point of view what this body is made up of. This is elaborately described in texts of the Ayurveda, the composition of the living body. But major function of the body is to be the place, location of our senses, sense organs. Just like a computer has input-output arrangement, we have input-output arrangement. The body is a case, an enclosure, but we need access to the outside world. So these are our senses. With our senses, we receive information, sensations, and we also have output. We act. We move our hands, we move our legs, we use our other external organs of excretion, of procreation, and so on. These are jnanendriyas and karmendriyas, the knowledge-acquiring senses, or the input ports, and the active senses, the karmendriyas, which are the output. By these senses, we have contact with the outside, with others than ourselves, things and people. Without our senses, if we had no senses, we would have no social life. We would have no relationships. We cannot just mentally have relationships. We have to have senses. Even a very distant relationship requires some sort of sensation. You may receive an email message from a person you have not seen for 20 years. They haven't even sent you a physical piece of paper, a letter. We see in ancient times, writing was not required. Learning was done by memorization, by hearing. Studying the Vedas out of books was considered offensive. One was required to hear the Vedas. Writing was used for mundane purposes. You want to write a shopping list, you can write it down. Or you want to write someone a letter. That's a little more elevated. Send a message to somebody by writing a letter. Then you use writing. They didn't have paper as we know it. They used other substances in different parts of the country. And they wrote to send messages. Nowadays, we receive our messages by email. When I was younger, we didn't have such a thing. We actually had to use the post office and put write on paper. We didn't even have computers to type out word processors. Anyway, you send a letter to a distant person. He receives a letter. He doesn't see you, but he has to physically see the letter. His eyes have to operate, or someone, he's blind, someone else has to read the letter to him. And his ears have to function to hear it. His eyes have to function to see it. Even if you're dealing with email, well, everything's digitalized, still you have to have senses to process the information. To have any relationship with anybody, you need to use your senses. These senses are ways of extending ourselves to other people and things in the world. Well, okay, Krishna is also a person. So if we want to have any relationship with Krishna, we have to use our senses. In spiritual life, it is sensual life. Not in the bad sense of inappropriately indulging the senses. This is all appropriate use of the senses in our relationship with Krishna. Nor is it that there's no pleasure, that pleasure is bad. And senses used for pleasure
it's a bad use of them. No. Using your senses in relationship with Krishna is the highest pleasure. Better than sex, better than intoxication. This is the pleasure of serving Krishna. This is a sensory. Let's say sensory, but maybe this word sensual has been ruined, so we don't use that word. Not sensual in the ordinary sense, but sensory. Visual, tactual, auditory, also smelling, whatever you call that. All the senses are used by a devotee who has a loving relationship with Krishna. In connection with Krishna, he hears Krishna, he touches Krishna, he smells Krishna, he sees Krishna. And then Krishna enjoys the devotee in reciprocation. It is sensual pleasure, a sensory pleasure. But it's pure. There is no inebriation and no selfishness. The difference between material sense pleasure and spiritual is that material sense pleasure is selfish, motivated to take for your get and take and keep for yourself, whereas loving sensual service is for the pleasure of the other. There's a difference between love and lust. It's the same operation of the senses, but the motivation is just the opposite between love and lust, material and spiritual, spiritual and material, sensory engagement. So, we are sensory beings. Our life is just like Aristotle said, man is a social being. And I'm trying to explain that being social, having any relationship with anybody, means being sensual, sensory, using your senses. So, therefore, if our life is social, then our life is sensory. And our Krishna and our life with Krishna also is sensory. But we have to... So, it's not that we have to stop being sensual. We have to rectify or purify our use of our senses. Atakshi Krishna namadi namave grahyamitu indriyai. Krishna and everything about him, we're not just interested in Krishna as an abstract idea, like the impersonal Brahman talked about in the Upanishads. We have a more specific name, Krishna, and many thousands of names of Krishna, which describe his personal qualities. We're interested in Krishna and all his qualities. His beauty, his activities, his relationships with his devotees, all these things, and the place where he lives, these things, what he wears, what he eats, the perfume he wears, everything about these are all udipanas, or things that remind us of our loving relationship with Krishna. So we're interested in all these things. But nabhave grahyam indriyai, the senses that are in the condition they are now, in our material life, are incapable of accessing this sensual data. These sensations connected to Krishna cannot be gained, cannot be accessed with our current material senses. There has to be a transformation. Just like you have a machine that you've brought from Europe or America, or from America, operating on 110 volts. You should not try to plug it in directly to the current that's supplied here. It will destroy the machine. You need a transformer. You have to transform it to fit the machine. The current supplied is not the appropriate current. Similarly, you want to have sensory contact with it in Krishna. That can be arranged. But there has to be a transformation of the operation of your senses. You have to transform from the polarity of material lust to the polarity of love. You have to transform your senses. The spiritual senses are there, but the polarity is wrong. We're operating in the opposite direction. We have to reverse the operation of our senses. Seva unmukhe, seva unmukha. Turn toward the direction of service. Service of Krishna, not service of yourself. So it's reversal of polarity. unmukha, turning your face. That's all we have to do. It's like Brahma sitting on his lotus flower. He has to create the whole universe. But he doesn't get up. He doesn't have to run around. Like Mayapur Chandrabhu has to get on his scooter and run all over the place because no one, you know, he doesn't have adequate help, so he has to run around himself. Lord Brahma doesn't have to jump on a scooter and run around. He's sitting on the lotus flower in one place. And he simply... Hi, Val. We were just talking about you. Comparing you to Lord Brahma. He just looks up, turns his head. And when he turns his head, he manifests three other heads. You know, looks around in all three directions and he ends up with four heads. But that's all he has to do. He doesn't have to get up from his seat, jump on a scooter, and run to the other side of the universe. He can create everything just sitting there. He just turns his head around, looks around, makes sure he sees what's going on, and utters the Vedas, and everything happens. You know, the Vedas come out of his mouth, and according to the instructions of the Vedas, the universe is created. Unmukha. All you have to do is turn your head around, and everything happens. Like that, the living entity is creator of his own little world. He's not Brahma, literally. But by our attitude, we change our life. Our face, not physically, but attitude, is directed toward the spiritual realm. We live a spiritual life. And all we do is turn our head around and look at Maya instead and become attracted to Maya. Our life becomes material. Sevon mukehi jivado. We have to simply change the polarity of our senses so that they're flowing toward Krishna, not flowing toward Maya. That's the whole process of the transformation from spiritual to material life. Jiva ado, beginning with the tongue, is the normal process. Recommended normal process for most of us is to start with the tongue. Ears in the tongue. Tongue first, because the ears are passive. They're not hard. The ears are not hard to control. You just have to put the right things inside the ears. Let the right sounds come. The ears don't even have, unless you stick something in your ear, they don't close. You can plug them artificially, but they don't have any flaps to close. They're always on. The ears don't turn off. Your eyes, your vision turns off when you close your eyes. When you go to sleep, you normally close your eyes. And you don't see anything. But you continue to hear things. Because there's no way to turn off the ears. So even in sleep, that's how you wake somebody up. By saying something first. Then you pour a bucket of water on his head, if that doesn't work. But you often can wake somebody up by saying something. Because the ears, the hearing... perception is still functioning even in sleep. Ears don't have anything for turning them off. So ears are not, you know, the control of the sense of hearing is relatively easy. It just requires giving the proper object of hearing. Listen to turn off the television set. You know, stop listening to Harry Reasoner or worse. And turn on the tape of Prabhupada and listen to that. So it's just a matter of changing what goes into the ear. You know, someone else can help you do that. It's like when I was in the hospital, I was under a respirator for 2.5 days, semi-conscious, not really conscious. But thankfully, Bhir Krishna Raj came and brought a tape recording of the six Goswamis. I was listening to that for those 2 days. You know, Shashad Goswam Ashtakam. And because someone put the right thing into my ear, that my hearing, control of my hearing was arranged for without my doing anything. But controlling the tongue is a lot more difficult. Lobha moisu durmati. The tongue is self-willed, avaricious. Avaricious, that means very greedy. Always wants to eat something, that's the input, and talk something. And tongue is indiscriminate. It's very happy to eat nonsense and talk nonsense. So, jiva ada, we got to first of all bring the tongue under control. Vishaya vinivartante
nirahara dehina. A person can, nirahara means fasting. So a person can forcibly refrain from sensory indulgence just by willpower. He can successfully control all of his senses, and still he may not be able to control the tongue. Rasa varjam. Rasa is the sense of taste, the business of the tongue. So he may be able to control, and not that everybody can. A lot of people would rather die than even think of fasting. But some people decide, I'm going to, you know, not eat such and such, maybe partial fast. You know, I'll refrain from black olives because they give me pimples. You know, or something like that. You know, voluntary partial fast. Some people can do. But practically speaking, even when you can control all the senses, refrain from indulging unhealthily. With all the senses, the last one that can be brought under control is the tongue. So therefore, it's the first one that has to be conquered. Sevon muke hijiva adau. To bring your tongue under control. Chant Hare Krishna. That was Prabhupada's proposal. Here's spiritual life. Just chant Hare Krishna. Here's the fulfillment of all your desires. Just do this. Engage your tongue in chanting the name of Krishna. If you're willing to do that, then your spiritual life begins. Sevon mukhehi jivadal. Redirecting the polarity of your senses to have them going toward Krishna. If you just, instead of talking some mundane nonsense or some impersonal claptrap, just utter the names of Krishna, the glories of Krishna. That's the beginning of Krishna consciousness. Hearing and chanting. That's normal, the process. For normal, it's a standard process. There may be other ways to begin your Krishna consciousness. Here's Putana. She heard about Krishna before. She saw Krishna in a previous life, and she's heard about Krishna. But her real beginning of Krishna consciousness happens when she went to offer her breast for Krishna to drink. Now, this is a very intimate sensory contact, the child drinking from the mother's breast. This is, in the spiritual realm, is only found in the Vatsalya Rasa. Now, if you want Krishna to drink your breast, you'll have to become in the mood of his mother or nurse. You know, if you're in some other rasa, you don't get that privilege. You have to be female. If you're male, then you don't have any milk. You know, Krishna's not going to be able to drink from your breast. So, you know, it's limited. Limited access to that particular intimate relationship. Only some devotees can do that. Few have Krishna drink from their breast. Krishna arranged it for all the ladies and cows of Gokula when he expanded into the forms of the calves and the cowherd boys for 1 year. And then all the ladies and all the lady cows got Krishna drinking from their breast. Because these were young boys. Krishna did this at a young age. And they were attending the calves, not the grown-up cows. But that's rare. That's a special favor he does for the Gokulavasis. Elsewhere, it's very rare to get this privilege. Putana got it. She began her practice of Krishna consciousness on the very high level, taking the position of a mother or a nurse. But it's the same thing. Sevon muke, Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam. Using your senses to do loving service for the pleasure of the master of all senses. What is it? Sahasra Shirsha Purusha Sahasra Akshank Sahasra Pat. The Purusha, the Supreme Lord, has thousands of arms and legs, feet, heads. Sarvatak Panipadam Tat Sarvatok Shi Shiromikam Mukam. In Krishna's words, his hands and his legs are everywhere. So it's not just he has 1,000, count them, arms and legs. No, infinite number. And Krishna explains that in the Gita. His arms and legs are everywhere. It's not that he's some horrible, you know, octopus monster
with tentacles all over the universe. No, it means that everybody's, one way of understanding it, he does have his thousand-armed form. Yeah. The Virat Rupa is there. Anantashesha also has thousands of heads. Expansion of Krishna. But Krishna expands through the senses of all the living entities. Everybody's hands, legs, everybody's head belongs to Krishna. What is the relationship between body and soul? What makes something a body? It's just a pile of chemicals. They happen to be organic chemicals, so what? You know, there's methane gas in the earth, too. It's also organic chemical. The petrol we put in our cars is organic. It's hydrocarbons. But it's not considered a living body. You know, actually, it was made from living bodies, the petrol we use. It's from fossils, fossil fuel. But anyway, organic chemicals, just chemicals. What makes it a body? And what makes the living being the soul of the body? It's the relationship. The soul is giving consciousness to the body. The soul is knower of the body. Normally we know our own body, we don't know someone else's body. You know, I have sensation of my own body, and maybe extended sensation through my senses, but I don't feel in what the pain and pleasure of your body. It's limited to my own body. So the soul inhabits a body, owns it, feels it, experiences it, is conscious of it, and has some control over it. I can lift my finger as I like, but I'm not some telepathic mystic that I can make Dermot lift his finger at the same time. Oh, yeah. You know, anyway, I have power normally just of my own limbs. Yeah, the soul has control and knows his own body. Okay, that by that definition, I'm the soul inhabiting this body. Assuming I'm a conscious living being and not just a tape recording. Well, God, by that definition, has everything as his body because he knows and controls everything. So all of existence, including the spiritual energy, the marginal living entities, and the inert matter all comprise the body of God. This analogy was brought out and elaborated by Ramanujacharya in his books. Everything that exists comprises the body of God. So he's Rishikesha. His arms and his legs are everywhere because everybody's arms, legs, head, senses are Krishna's. That's explanation. So he's the master of the senses. We can use our senses to serve him. It's a matter of personal sensory contact, relationship by using our senses to come in contact with Krishna. It is an intimate thing. What was that about the dust particles of Krishna's lotus feet? When they're vibrated, when a devotee is vibrating, a pure devotee is speaking the glories of Krishna. He's making those dust particles shake off of Krishna's lotus feet and they fall on your head or into your ears. Comes out of the mouth of the devotee. I guess Krishna's inside the heart of that devotee. And with the breathing of that devotee and his speaking, particles from the dust of Krishna's lotus feet get shaken off, come through the breath and into your ear, and into your brain and heart. This is one description of the process. It's intimate sensory contact. Even though we think it's just hearing is just a vibration of the ether, very abstract. You can measure it, but you can't see it. It doesn't weigh anything. You know, the sound is a very subtle element, but actually the contact through sound is intimate. You can know someone much better by hearing than by seeing. Anyway, the material world we know primarily by seeing. It's the most prominent sense in material life, the sense of sight. That's the orientation of material life. But spiritual life is known primarily through hearing. Just like some animals, we human beings, at least modern human beings, are visual. Modern civilization is visual civilization. primitive people, people, aborigines, they may not be so visual. You show them a photograph, they never saw one before. They don't know what it is, even though it's their own picture. They can't relate to it. It's just a flat piece of paper. They can't even recognize their own image in a photograph because they're not visually oriented. We are. We learn how to read these scribbles on paper. You know, they're just scratches. But we get information from these scratches on a piece of paper because we're visually oriented. Our material life, modern material life, is very visual. Just like you drive down a road or you go into a city, everywhere there's signs. Supermarket, McDonald's. They're just scribbles on boards. But we orient our whole existence by the signs. You know, where's the sign for McDonald's? Where's the sign for a supermarket? And our whole life is based on this visual orientation of signs. But that's modern material life. Spiritual life is oriented, focused on the oral, or rather the auditory perception, hearing. Especially here we are in the material world. In the spiritual world, is a whole different realm. We can't even locate it. It's beyond all material universes. And it's hiding in our heart. Very mysterious. Where is the spiritual world? We can't locate it visually. We can't put it on a map. You know, a map shows you visually where things are. Even though we're looking at a huge country, that it would take me months to walk from one end to the other. You know? But I can put it on a map and put it on the desk in front of me and see the whole country. But that's just a visual orientation. There's no map like that of the spiritual world. Although Prabhupada put one on the cover of his first canto. But that's a transcendental feat. Normally you cannot make a visual map of the spiritual world. Our access to the spiritual world is from hearing. We know the material world with our eyes. But to get access to the other world that we can't see, we have to use our ears. And so that's where our knowledge of spiritual life, knowledge of the spiritual realm begins, is from hearing. So for us, we shouldn't imitate Putana and think that we can get Krishna to suck our breast or have some other intimate relationship with Krishna that we're not ready for, we're not fit for. Maybe in our realized condition, we will have that relationship or some very intimate relationship with Krishna. But now we're just beginners. We should focus primarily on the standard procedure of hearing and chanting about Krishna. This awakens our spiritual consciousness, transforms our senses from material to spiritual. And then even if we have some more intimate relationship with Krishna, something more than just hearing and chanting, that will be awakened by our hearing and chanting. Don't jump to what you think is your sarupa, or what someone tells you is your intimate service, until you qualify yourself by sufficient hearing and chanting. That's the standard procedure, and we don't have any justification for jumping over it and doing something whimsical. That's why we're sitting here and not in Radhakund. Yeah, that's why we're establishing our school on the side of Govardhan and not on the side of Radhakund. Because we're not ready for that intimate service. I'm not. If you want to go over there, okay, but I'm not ready for it. Okay, any questions or comments? Yes?
We also have material elements in the form of our body. And if this whole material nature, if it's seen as the body of Krishna, then all the events and the changes there will happen. Is it that he is able to switch on and off the experience, the conscious experience of those things?
Matak smitir gyanam apoharam cha. From me come knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. Yes, he can turn off.
He can turn off his experience.
Well, his experience.
Yes. Otherwise, the miseries in the material world would also affect him.
Yes, Krishna, that's what Jiva Goswami says, that Krishna doesn't pay attention to suffering of the material world. Normally he doesn't. Krishna doesn't experience the suffering we experience because he's always enjoying. You know, it's not desirable to suffer. If we had the choice, we wouldn't pay attention to our suffering either. We'd turn it off if we could. And Krishna can, so he does. He doesn't suffer the suffering. Our suffering, and he doesn't have any of his own. He doesn't pay attention to it. Only a person who's forced to is going to pay attention to suffering. So Krishna is not a masochist that's going to voluntarily suffer. So, okay, we have to suffer, unfortunately, but he doesn't have to join us in the suffering. That doesn't mean he's not compassionate. And in fact, he sends the Vaishnavas, who, some of them are sadhakas who have experienced suffering in their life. Not all of them, but some of them have experienced suffering in living in this material world, so they know what it is. Krishna doesn't know what suffering is, but some of his devotees do. And so they can manifest Krishna's compassion by having felt what we're feeling. But Krishna doesn't feel it. He doesn't feel pain. That's what Jiva Goswami says in the Bhakti Sandarbha. Okay. Do you have a comment? Oh, no. I thought you were... Okay. Sorry. Thinking, okay.
There's many instances where great Vaishnavas also lose touch with suffering.
Yes.
Of their own bodies.
Yes.
They completely lose touch with it. For instance, is that one Mataji, she passed away some years ago. She had brain tumor.
Yes.
And she was taking a whole lot of steroids.
Yes.
The doctor prescribed to relieve the brain tumor.
Yes.
And the doctors were saying that she should be in tremendous pain from the swelling of the body, from the swelling of the brain, all these things. But
yes.
Completely in ecstasy only, and always absorbed in chain.
She wasn't feeling the pain.
She didn't feel the pain at all.
Yes.
She was only in ecstasy. She was only associating nicely with the body.
Consider Prahlad Maharaj, who was exposed to a lot of pain. You know, things that would drive anybody else crazy. Fire, elephants crushing him, you know, snakes biting him, so many things. He didn't feel any pain. He told Nrisimhadev later on, Naivo Dvijay, I'm not in anxiety. I'm not feeling any, what to speak of pain, not even any disturbance in my mind. You know, Maya doesn't, you know, I don't bat my eye at Maya, it doesn't bother me. And he's had all the pain, I'm sorry, just saying, you know, all the possible pain that someone could suffer, all that kind of torture was given to Prahlad, and he didn't feel it. But he says Shoche, but I am lamenting. I'm lamenting for the suffering of the others, and I'm sorry. You may offer me liberation, but I'll refuse it unless you first of all, if I can save everybody else, then I'll think about going back to Godhead. So even though he's got no anxiety for himself, no pain. He's feeling the pain of the others. That's compassion. I'm sorry, Mother Maud.
I was just remembering Pusat Pratha Prabhu and the mercy of Hrishikesh.
Yes.
Because he actually left this world having suffered very extreme problems with cancer.
Yes.
And it should have been a source of incredible pain.
Yes.
But by higher arrangement, the cancer ate through his spinal nerves.
Ah.
And he couldn't feel anything. He didn't feel any pain. That's
Krishna's arrangement. We should learn from that. If we trust Krishna, don't worry about taking care of ourselves. Krishna will take care of us, even in the bad situations. Bad situations will come, but Krishna will take care of us if we trust Him. Do you have something, Jerry? Mission for?
Yeah.
Can you
explain that fifth person is completely self-realized? He's not body. If someone is giving him medicine, like anesthesia, or before operation, in English, anesthesia.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. If he's self-realized, so he will not be under the...
Well, you're asking, what does he need anesthesia for then? If a self-realized person, you're saying, if a self-realized person doesn't feel any pain, then there's no need, he shouldn't take anesthesia for an operation. Is that what you mean? Yeah. But, yes?
He will not be under the...
Oh, the anesthesia won't have any effect on him? Well, anyway, according to that reasoning, there's no need for him to take anesthesia because he can't feel any pain. The only purpose of anesthesia is so you don't feel pain. They put you to sleep. Well, it's scary to be awake and watch the operation. I had an eye operation. They gave me only a drop of anesthetic in my eye, just a drop of something, and I saw the whole thing. But it was, you know, it was a minor operation. But if they were going to do a major operation, even if it didn't feel anything, if you saw it, it'd be scary. So they put you to sleep, But primarily, so you don't feel the pain. But if someone can't feel pain, why do you need anesthesia? But it's not that a fully self-realized pure devotee never feels pain. That's up to Krishna. You know, there's no promise that, you know, chant Hare Krishna for 10 years, you'll never feel pain again. I don't think you'll find that. You know, so it's not an absolute rule that the devotees never feel any pain. Krishna, it's up to Krishna to kindly relieve them, but he exercises that discretion as he chooses. So, and it doesn't mean we all have to refuse anesthetic, yeah, because we're supposed to be self-realized. Yes?
Bhakti Thakur says we should, he himself sees pain and happiness with equal vision.
Yes.
They're both relieving him from the karma that is binding him here and will free him so he can actually gain Sevara Krishna.
Yes.
So that suffering is a manifestation of negative activities being involved in, and happiness is a manifestation of the positive or the pious activities being involved in. So he's got to clear it all out.
Is the attitude of a Madhyama Bhakta that he is suffering and he still has some tendency to enjoy. He's not perfect yet. But he takes it all as what he created for himself by his karma. My suffering and my enjoying. He's experiencing them. He's not a Paramahamsa yet. But he's got the strong conviction that my pleasure and pains are just my own karma. Nobody else's fault. I just have to tolerate them. Tolerate the pleasure as well as the pain. So that's, you know, medium platform, intermediate platform. Where you're still feeling some pain, but at least philosophically you can understand that you know, I'm suffering. This is a reaction to my own nonsense, and I should tolerate it. And then you graduate to the higher platform by that mature attitude. Thank you.
Question may be asked. Apparently, visually, it undergoes material transformations. So, and the question may be asked: how spirit can undergo material transformations?
Well, because I think that statement can't be taken too literally. Sambhavami Atma Maya. Krishna says, "I come to this world in my spiritual body," but he says that about himself. The devotees don't do that. Devotees, you know, jivas, when they come here even on a mission of Krishna, there's Shakti Vesha Avatar. Still, the jivas normally take material bodies. The body becomes fully spiritualized in the sense that it's used strictly for Krishna's service, not at all for selfish sense gratification, but it's still a material body. If I buy a motorcycle and don't use it for my own sense gratification, only use it for Krishna, it's still a motorcycle. And the body is still a material body. So I don't think that statement should be taken too literally, that all of a sudden he's got a Vaikuntha body. It means that it's spiritualized. So it's still going to get sick and undergo the reactions that matter undergoes, because it's still a material body. Yes, ma'am?
The nice analogy is the rod and fire.
Yes, that's the example Prabhupada gives.
It imitates fire in the sense that it's very similar.
It's got the practical functions of fire. You want to get burnt? Touch a hot rod. You know, you don't need to directly touch the fire. You want to cauterize something? You don't have to strike a match. You just can use a hot rod, and you can burn the flesh. So it's functionally fire. So it's spiritual in that sense. It's spiritualized, but it's still a material body, and therefore things that happen in material bodies, if you leave it out, you know, if the person leaves it, the body will rot. You know, we put when the exalted Vaishnava passes away, we put salt on the body to preserve the body, because the body is going to rot. Yes.
Now, the deity is can also undergo a visual transformation. How we can?
Well, that's Krishna's special incarnation in material elements. Krishna. You could say, I hope this is not blasphemy, that Krishna is taking a material body when he appears as a deity. It's a dual existence. The spiritual body is there. But there's also imposed on that, on top of that, there's a material form that we're seeing. I mean, it is, Jagannath is made of wood. You know, if we bathe him every day, the paint will come off and the wood will rot. If we pour water on him every day. Do they do that in Puri? Do they bathe him with water? No. Okay.
They use a mirror.
Use a mirror, yeah. Because they're considering, it's wood. It's wood, and they have to replace the body every 12 years. Or what is it, 12 years? So, yeah, the material form is there. But it's you know, the Lord is appearing with his spiritual body in the same place, the same location. Yes, yeah, and then, okay. Mayapur Chandraprabhu first, and then Damodar?
The perception of Krishna in the deity form is very easily obtained with a little bit of mercy from Guru and Krishna.
Yes.
That Krishna is actually there in the deity form. So in that sense, I mean, even a neophyte can perceive with a little bit of heartfelt desire that Krishna is there in the deity form.
Yes.
So in that sense, you can say that there's no material body.
Yes. And the appearance of the wood rotting is just, a kind of illusion. It's not, you know, Jagannath doesn't, his body doesn't decay.
Krishna is,
there's no difference. It's not, no, which maybe I'm erroneous to say that the deity is there in the material form. There's no difference between Krishna and his body. It's just, that's the way we see it with our eyes, but it's not exactly right. Damodar?
Yes, I don't quite fully understand the analogy you're giving about the electricity and the transformer.
The operation has to be changed. You know, the way that machine was built was to handle 110 volts at a time, not 220. So you have to run the current through a transformer, the step-down transformer, to bring it down to a safe voltage. There's a transformation of the energy that has to be done. So we have to transform the energy process of our sensory operations. You know, it's not a question of voltage, it's a question of polarity, which is also a problem. You know, it can also destroy your machine if you plug things into the wrong polarity, the positive where the negative goes. That's why you have to put batteries in the right way. So like that, our batteries are upside down. Everything's flowing away from Krishna toward our own self. We've got the short circuit. The body is serving itself instead of serving Krishna. The body is meant to serve Krishna. The current is meant to flow, you know, out of the battery. But you make a short circuit, the battery just depletes, you know, immediately, because it's just unloading into itself and wasting all the electrons. You know, so we have a short circuit. Our sensories are reaching out and taking back and giving back to the senses. Short circuit. So that short circuit has to be fixed. The current is supposed to flow out to Krishna. It's a polarity problem. Okay. I agree with you. And then Janabha. Yes.
Then his body becomes a transmitter. And he went to the spiritual world with the same body.
Yes.
So that body becomes just like Lord? Or
it became spiritualized by being touched with the conch shell. When Dhruva Maharaj was in the airplane going back to Vaikuntha, when he passed through the Viraj River, then his body changed. If in the rare case that a devotee is given the privilege to leave this world in his same body without dying, that body will be mystically transformed as he's leaving the universe. As long as he's still in it, it'll still be a material body. Okay, it's going through the Viraj River that transforms your body into spirit. If you're for some reason going through the Viraj River with a material body, that material body will be turned into spirit by being bathed in the Viraj. So that I presume that's at the point at which Dhruva Maharaj's body became Vaikuntha body, is as he was leaving the material world.
But
so you take your car through a car wash, you know, the dirt's washed off. So like that, it was transcendental car wash of the Viraj River. You know, as he was in his airplane, his body became spiritual.
Not before?
Not before. I don't think so. I don't know. Maybe in his case, something special was done. We'd have to look in the commentaries to see what the commentators say.
The Pandavas are also described as left.
In same self, same body. Yes. But the bodies they had before were material bodies. So that means they took their spiritual the material bodies out of the material world. But out the door, it gets changed to a spiritual body. That's the normal process, at least. Yes, sir?
How about now the Muni? He travels everywhere.
He was given the body of a Parshada, you know, of an eternal associate of the Lord. His body's eternal. It means that, you know, for the duration of the universe, he's in the same body. Lord Shiva, even though he expands into the material world, doesn't change his body. But whether that's a material or spiritual body, I can't say. The body that Narada Muni has, he goes to Vaikuntha in that same body. He comes back, he goes back and forth between the material and spiritual worlds. But what, strictly speaking, is the identity of that body, whether it's matter or spirit, I don't know. Okay, yeah. Yes, Bart, over.
Prabhupada saying about this, the body transformation of a great, when entering the spiritual body, he said, now the conception generally of people is that spirit is something like which is transformable, which is changing.
Yes, yes.
So more like a fluid or something. That's our conception they have. Prabhupada said that once, that's only in the material world, but once when you enter the spiritual world, it becomes hard like a rock.
It's not liquid, it's solid.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, spirit is more concrete than matter. We think that spirit is something, you know, abstract or ephemeral, but actually the spirit is the solid reality. We're in the make believe world. Jump on.
I want to ask something Nityananda Prabhu said. The because the pure devotee, his body is not contaminated by matter, then like, well, we can see in the case of a pure devotee that they're apparently undergoing suffering or reactions, but there's no karma. So what is it that they're undergoing? Is that just internal energy?
If you're talking about someone who's 100% pure devotee, that means he's got no material desires and no fault in his behavior or attitude at all. If you're talking about that kind of pure devotee, yes, whatever suffering he seems to be experiencing is being imposed on him purely by the spiritual energy. You know, just like Lord Jagannath appeared in the dream with Baladev and slapped Pundarik Vidyanidhi for thinking something about his starched clothes. But that was the Lord himself slapping him. So we get slapped in the face by the spiritual energy if we're perfectly pure devotees. But if we're not, if we're still half and half, to the extent that we still belong to Maya, she's got control over us, and she'll be meeting out punishment to us. If we're 20% still in Maya, that means Maya can still have 20% of her influence on us.
I was thinking like about Prabhupada being like bored by a hole or something like that.
No, but that we should understand is the internal energy. Now, if we assume that so-and-so, Prabhupada, or anybody else is 100% spiritual, 100% under the protection of the spiritual energy, the material energy cannot touch him. Axiomatic. Someone who's under full protection of the spiritual energy is not at all affected by the material energy. It's only because of failing to be 100% under the control of the Daivi Prakriti that the material Prakriti can have any influence on us. And only to that extent. That's all we have to do, is take full shelter of Krishna's divine energy. Then Maya cannot touch us. Yes, Mother?
I still remember Prabhupada saying in Bhagavatam that when a devotee suffers,
yes,
that there are two possibilities. There. One is that Krishna is showing the greatness of his devotee because he always passed the test,
yes,
for the benefit of us.
Yes.
And the other thing was that it's a beautiful purport, but I can't remember where it is, where Prabhupada explains that, you know, Krishna, he will actually create the situation to intensify the loving relationship with the devotee.
That's a kind of purification, but it's not cleaning off dirt. It's taking the brilliant gold and polishing it even more. You know, there's advancement. A person who's perfect can become more perfect. A person who's got intense love for Krishna, Krishna can arrange for that love to be further intensified. And apparent suffering or apparent punishment may be the way to do that. But it's not a dirty person being cleaned. He's already clean. And it's not the material energy doing that. That's not the action of the material energy. The action of the material energy, vidya and avidya. The avidya makes us dirty and the vidya cleans off the dirt. Yeah, but if you're already clean, there's no scope for either vidya or avidya to have any effect on you. Then you're transcendental, and only the transcendental energy, the transcendental energy of the Lord, can affect you. Only.
Also, about Dhruva Maharaj, I thought he's still on Dhruva Loka. No, he's went back to the spiritual
world. Oh, he's still in Dhruva Loka, yeah. Dhruva Loka is a Vaikuntha planet. So, yes, he went back to Godhead, but he's still in the material world. But that's a Vaikuntha, that's an embassy of Vaikuntha.
So then...
Yeah.
So he didn't go through Viraj, or he did, or...?
He went to Shishumara. Anyway, if Dhruva Loka, for correct understanding, Dhruva Loka is a Vaikuntha planet, then... It's got some version of Viraja, you know, some canal of the Viraja River around it. Yeah, there's the same forces work, so you have to be perfectly purified to enter it. There's a force field there.
Yeah. Okay. Even like Earth has Van Allen belt.
Yeah, and therefore he didn't go to the moon. Yes.
But other than it would appear this mere explanation that his parents performed beside this for 12 years, and then that child was born. Mukhya Brahmana drew the jiva who was inside him out and then took that body.
You mean the parents conceived someone else and he was kicked out by Mukhya Brahmana? Okay.
Mukhya Brahmana did stay in the womb.
He
didn't have to stay in the womb. So when the body came out, some jiva...
at the time of birth.
Yeah, just at the time of birth when he entered into it. He took the jiva out and then he took this.
And Madhya, okay. He's son of Vayu. Vayu can do those things. Yeah. Yes, yes, but I don't think they have much of a idea of difference between spirit and matter. Actually, yeah, everything's God's energies, but they don't talk about the way we do about energy of the spiritual world and energy of the material. They don't even talk much about the spiritual world. Okay, I think we stop here. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Yeah.